Thank you very much, Suzette, for really, that's a really great introduction. I'm not used to getting introductions like that, so thank you. This is going to be about the sort of the longer term perspective and also the geographical perspective to desertification and dust emissions from mostly arid regions. And so I'm going to be talking about a fairly wide range of topics, but I hope to be able to bring it back to the human perspective at a number of particular points in time. So hopefully that will be, hopefully what I say will sort of set the background for the other presentations later on in this session. This is my disclosure slide, that I don't have any relationships or conflicts of interest. So we're talking today about dry lands. It's important to recognize that areas that are basically dry, that have precipitation deficits, occupy about 40%, or actually 41.3% of the global land area. And you can see that they're divided into various different degrees of aridity or dryness, from the hyper-arid deserts of like the Sahara and Arabia and parts of the Middle East and also parts of the southwestern US, to dry subhumid areas, which include much of the northern Great Plains. They include areas in Central Asia and in China. One thing that's really important to recognize is that at least for 2000, almost a third, or just over a third, of the world's population live in these dry areas. It's also, and you can see this by just mapping the countries that are represented on. That's 90% of the population of drylands actually lives in developing countries, and in fact some of the poorest countries in the world, in sub-Saharan Africa and elsewhere, are actually in drylands. So some of the major characteristics, just to review this: low precipitation. Precipitation is always less than potential evapotranspiration. As a result, the vegetation cover is low. There's a very high variability of rainfall, both in space and time, and aeolian or wind processes, sand and dust emissions and transport, are really important. Because of the lack of precipitation, fluvial processes, rivers and such, are generally very ephemeral and seasonal. However, they're very sensitive wetlands in lowland areas, and playas or terminal lake basins, lakes that have no outlet, are common, at least in some areas. So the characteristic is lack of water. And this makes arid regions very sensitive to anything that causes fluctuations in precipitation. Some of the key issues that we have to deal with: this is a very fragile environment. It's a very highly variable environment, both in space and time. That the ecological processes and geomorphic and geologic processes are very variable. And overlaid on this very fragile, variable environment is a rapidly growing and an increasingly urban population. Some of the highest population growth rates in the United States are in fact in arid regions, places like Las Vegas, the Phoenix area, in Arizona. These are some of the most rapidly growing areas. And if you go to other parts of the world, large parts of sub-Saharan Africa, Middle East, these are very rapid areas of very rapid population growth. And because these areas are dependent on scarce water resources, they're very sensitive to climate change that might affect these water resources, especially changes in amount, the type, and the seasonal distribution of precip. So deserts also have linkages to other parts of the world. That's changes in precipitation in the mountain areas surrounding the deserts may affect the desert regions, climate change certainly can lead to deterioration of the environment in these areas and out-migration of people. There's a large number of people from many of these areas, certainly in the developing world, that have been forced to migrate or have chosen to migrate to other areas. And then dust from these desert regions affects a whole series of things, including the radiated properties of the atmosphere, with perhaps reinforcing climate change. Dust provides nutrients for soils in far distant locations, as you'll hear later. Ocean and terrestrial productivity is significantly impacted by dust from desert regions. And of course, the focus of this meeting, air quality and human health is significantly affected by these dust from desert regions. So these desert regions have an impact far outside of their immediate area. One of the sort of parts of this session is desert desertification. And I thought it was appropriate to put in a slide to let you know what or at least one definition of desertification. This, and the background, is perhaps the extreme end member of desertification, where this village in Mauritania has been abandoned because it's been invaded by sand dunes. This is kind of the end result of progressive and, at least in the human timescale, irreversible environmental degradation. And basically, this degradation results in a permanent loss of ecosystem productivity. So we're basically looking at productivity, the ecosystem, which of course translates also into lack of ability to support livelihoods that are based upon ecosystem services and resources. One example of this within the US is the transformation of grasslands in southern New Mexico. As once they're disturbed, the resources are redistributed to islands of fertility, increasing the cover of shrubs, and the intervening areas become areas that are essentially devoid of productivity and nutrients, and also they're the centers of places where erosion by wind and water take place. So this is a self-reinforcing positive feedback situation, so that the environment changes completely and becomes less productive. Now, arid regions, these are the bright red ones. This is a slightly different map, focusing largely on the drier ends of these things. The bright red areas, as you can see, are the arid and hyper-arid areas. A very wide variety of geologic settings, from extensive areas in the Sahara and the Middle East to much more restricted areas, much more mountainous areas in South America and North America. And there's a wide range of variety in desert regions, from the high relief deserts of the southwestern United States, where you can see snow-capped mountains, which provide the majority of water to the lowland areas, the typical sort of what you might imagine as desert regions in places like Namibia, with lots of sand dunes. But as it turns out, most of desert areas are in fact much more like the lower two, where they are very low relief, rocky desert areas. And you see an example from Namibia on one side and on the right, your right, Central Australia. There's also great contrast from year to year and season to season. At the upper part, this is the Cuisap River in Namibia. You can see the riverbed in 2002, dry for 99.9% of the time, but significantly impacted by major floods, as you can see, ones that occurred a couple of years ago, which have fairly major transforming events on these environments. And then closer to home, the Gran Desierto in Mexico, between a dry year, 2003, and an adjacent area in 2005. And you can see that these bare sand dunes have been completely transformed by growth of vegetation following some heavy winter rainfall. Now, the various IPCC iterations have projected quite significant climate changes in many arid areas. This, for example, is in the significant increases in temperature in pretty much all of these areas, and a very variable potential impact of rainfall. Probably in the southwestern United States, much of the Middle East getting drier, but other areas like sub-Saharan Africa perhaps getting wetter. Although the precip projections and from the climate models are much less certain than the temperature ones. But we can already see these sorts of things happening. This is for the southwestern United States, and work by Seeger et al. A couple of years ago, where they show a progressive drying. This is the y-axis is millimeters per day from 1900 through to about the end of the century. And you can see we're about getting into the drier phase. There's a lot of evidence that in fact, the southwestern United States is indeed getting hotter and drier. So dust emissions, the focus, or at least the environmental and human health impacts of this, they require both sand and wind to make them work. And so we need to look at this. They're clearly a geologic process of great significance in these areas. Most of the dust comes from a series of dust hotspots in the Middle East. These are areas where the dust emissions are measured by satellites and also on the ground are much higher than the intervening area. And you can see, you know, the brighter colors here show that the major dust hotspots are in fact in the Sahara. Most of the world's dust comes from there, but also important areas in the Arabian Peninsula and the Western United States, and of course in China. We can see that over the sort of period of record, observational record, this is from West Africa, there's a significant correlation, at least, that periods of drier conditions, as you can see here, this is the red one, correspond, periods of high dust emissions appear to correlate with dry, low rainfall drought episodes, clearly removal of vegetation. But as I think Richard Reynolds will say later on, there's actually a very complex relationship between dust emissions and climatic variables. We can also go to the longer-term geologic record, which gives us a background. Here we're going back to about couple of thousand years ago, and this is from West Africa, that you can see that the prior to about 1900, the dominant influence on dust emissions from West Africa, as reported in marine sediments, was in fact climate, that you can see a big dip here in dust emissions that corresponds to a wetter period. So there's significant correlations there, but in recent times, it appears that the dust emissions from the West Africa have increased exponentially, largely because of the introduction of European and other export crops, which leave their agricultural systems leave large areas of land exposed to wind action and dust and cause dust emissions. And we can use these sort of records to provide us with sort of models for how dust and sand gets moved in terms of change interrelationships between precipitation and temperature and vegetation cover and wind and eventually increased aeolian activity. We can even go further back into the past and see where the record of longer term climate changes. You can see that the dust input to the western Atlantic Ocean off West Africa
was much lower during the period of what generally wetter climates about 10,000 years ago, and then increased significantly after 5,000 years ago.
So we're in an area geologically of fairly high dust emissions and dry climatic conditions. But one thing I'd like to sort of generally end up with is that the human impact on many desert regions, in fact, may outweigh the effects of climate change in the future. Things like water diversion for agriculture and human use, the largest single dust source in the United States used to be Owens Lake in California. That was dried as a result of diversion of water to the city of Los Angeles. Land use change and urbanization also likely increase dust. And you can see that the more color there is on these areas, much increased desert human impact on desert regions historically and in the future. And exponential or very rapid growth of many desert cities and rapid urbanization. This is Dubai, dramatic increases in the urban area and of course all of the impacts that go on in the peri-urban area. And another famous example of diversion of water for human use and agriculture, another thing, basically the desiccation of the Aral Sea from a largely permanent water body. You can see the greener colors in 2001 to 2009, an open area, and you can actually see some dust being emitted from these areas. So these human impacts actually have just as much an impact as climate change on these arid regions. So in conclusion, I think you can say that desert regions are likely to respond in a very diverse sort of way to climate change, with concomitant impacts on human use of these areas. That we do, however, expect that human impacts will locally or regionally enhance the effect of future climate change. That people will be working in an environment that becomes increasingly extreme and potentially unsustainable by increasing disturbance and pressure on land resources and water resources. So I think this gives you a general background, I hope it does anyway, for the succeeding talks, which will concentrate on specific aspects of this global issue. It's not just it has regional significance, but it also has very significant global impacts. So thank you for your time.
We have time for a question or two.
Yeah.
When another way to compare the effects of humans on dry environments and climate change effects, to say that would be to say that there's a positive feedback relationship. There's warming rural environments that are dry and move people to cities, where then they pump water out of those areas and also often have more access to fossil fuels, and so it's actually kind of a positive.
Oh, without question, yes. I don't think anybody has produced such a nice sort of, a sort of conceptual diagram, or at least I've never seen one, but that's absolutely correct. I mean, you can see that in the margins of many of these urban areas in the Middle East and sub-Saharan Africa, there's this whole zone where they have highly disturbed areas and the impact on water resources. I mean, there's all kinds of interesting things that, for example, because some of these urban populations actually have more economic buying power and changes in lifestyle. For example, in China, a lot of the desertification in sort of the Mongolia and areas like that is driven by increased livestock populations there that are geared entirely to producing food for these increasingly wealthy urban populations. So there's a big sort of disconnect physically and sort of economically or psychologically between these two areas. So the people in the urban areas don't really know or particularly care where their food is coming from, but it's coming from areas that are basically being significantly impacted by this sort of overgrazing and overuse of resources there. And then they, of course, the urban areas complain about the dust storms that come from these rural areas far away.
Any other questions? I have a question. I was fascinated by that picture of that village was being deserted. And I know there are a number of variables, obviously, that affect how desertification progresses. But what kind of time frame? 1 year, 5 years, 10 years? What do we look at it in terms of a simple, I guess?
I think that's probably about a decade old sort of time
scale. Okay.
That is, in fact, in an area where there have been human populations there for, certainly since the 14th century, so that's 600, 700 years, that there's been a progressive westward movement of the oasis, because the main sand movement is from the northeast. So the older parts of the village or the whole oasis have largely been invaded by dunes. And as it moved further to the west, there's still human populations. And this is basically, I think it takes a few years to a decade to come to that point. Yeah.
All right. Any other questions? No? Go ahead. We've got a minute.
I take it the scenarios, IPCC scenarios, where the business as usual scenario that you mm-hmm. And the other is, always when I look at the map of the world, it's just my own fantasy. Look where the big deserts are, and I see, these are sites of early human civilizations. And in a way, the final common pathway of civilization is desert. Am I being too ungeographic?
No, I think that certainly in many areas that's absolutely correct. I mean, but you have to remember that some of these early sites of human sort of agricultural and urban development were taking place toward the end of the African humid period, at least as far as in the Saharan region. And it's a sobering thought when you kind of go to somewhere like Egypt and you think, some of these big changes that occurred and people moving to the Nile, a permanent source of water, were in fact associated with the desiccation of the Sahara 4,000 to 5,000 years ago. And so that's pretty significant. And I'm sure that obviously impacted elsewhere in the region. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.